versus Lynchburg Department of Social Services, and this is a consolidated case, and we have Ms. Whitfield and apparently Ms. Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. And we have this allocated for 40 minutes. If you can tell me, have the two of you determined how you're going to divide your time?
Yes, Mr. Howard, 5 minutes of my time.
Okay, very good. And I see no, given that we don't have as many counsel, I see no reason to have this bleed into 40 minutes. I think 30 minutes should be sufficient. Counsel, tell me if you agree.
Your Honor, I've never been accused of being long-winded, so I don't even know that I would need a full 15 minutes, but 30 minutes should be sufficient.
Thank you. Then we will go with 30 minutes, and that means that you'll divide 15 minutes apiece. Okay, very good. Thank you. And that means you all will divide.
Yes.
Okay, very good. Thank you. And you may proceed when you're ready.
May it please the court, good morning. My name is Katina Whitfield, and I represent Jeanette and Wessel Campbell on this appeal. And recognizing that these are very sensitive cases, we're dealing with four minor children who are the grandchildren of Janet and Wessel Campbell. They are the maternal grandparents, judges. At all times, this matter was at the lower court, Juvenile Domestic Relations Court and Circuit Court. Mr. and Mrs. Campbell were pro se, so they represented themselves, and they brought me on to bring this matter forward on appeal. And the main factors that I guess I want to bring up or have your honors decide is that these matters collectively should be either reversed or remanded for a new trial. And I'll take the children because they...
Before we get into the merits of the case, we've got a procedural problem. And as you noted in your assignment of error, the issue was not preserved. There was no motion to strike. There was no objection to the final order. And I understand that they were pro se, but how do we get past the problem that it wasn't presented to the trial court?
And Your Honor, I think that we could get past that through the ends of justice provision, and I don't know that right off. I think it's the 5A.
518.
Yes, Judge. When it talks about the ends of justice,
But we've never applied the ends of justice to individuals who were pro se. In other words, the same standards apply to them. Ends of justice is typically a situation where, in a criminal context, for example, there is no such crime or lack of just complete lack of jurisdiction, something on that order, not simply because you acted as your own lawyer, you didn't do a particularly good job, which is kind of what we've got here.
And Your Honor, I understand that, and that's why I would submit to you there's the first for everything. And so,
well, I'm not sure this is the case for first, though. But go ahead.
And I would ask that you would find in that respect.
Well, and beyond that, then, let me ask this. It seems to me, in substance, what we've got here in the bottom line is clearly there's a statutory requirement that the court consider placement with family members in a situation like this, which the court clearly did. But the court found that it was not in these children's best interest, given the special needs situation that they have and the age and some of the physical infirmities of the grandparents, that in the totality, it was not in these children's best interest to be placed with them. It seems to me if we were to address the merits, you'd have to somehow convince us that is plainly wrong as a matter of law, because to the extent it's fact-finding by the trial court who heard the testimony, could see the demeanor of the witnesses as they testified and that sort of thing, that you know we're bound by that. And while I might have done something different had I been sitting in that chair at that time, that's not our standard of review. So how do we deal, you know, in terms of the merits, it seems to me what we've got are essentially fact-driven considerations here, which our standard of review binds us to those considerations the trial court arrived at.
And Your Honor, I would just submit that While that may be the case, or I guess that is the standard, Judge, there were facts that competed with the, I guess, the recitation and the order cited by the judge.
Of course, but you know we don't reweigh the facts.
Yes, Your Honor, I understand that, but I would ask you to consider the fact that these parties were able to become foster parents. They were able to, at least the grandmother, lived in Miami, and she was able to maintain employment as well as stable housing, all the things that social services would require any sort of adoptive placement or adoptive home.
Counsel, let's go back to that.
Yes.
First and foremost, even if we get to the merits, okay?
Yes.
If we get to the merits, and then we're only talking about the two girls. Would you agree, since they were not approved to be suitable placements through interstate, would you agree that the boys are not part of the issue? Because they didn't object to that, and they acquiesced, so would you not agree that the two girls are you alleging that all children are at issue at this point in time?
Your Honor, I would submit that the young man would come in under a different set of facts and factors that I can present argument on.
Okay, but you do. I know. I know you understand that without that favorable home study and approval acceptance, that the Department of Social Services is barred via the case law, or excuse me, statute, from placing the children in a home in Florida, even though it's with the grandparents, because they were not approved in reference to the home study with the boys, right?
And Your Honor, the statute that covers social services, but the Campbells also filed their own custody petitions, and
But ultimately, counsel, these children, the parental rights were terminated, and they were in foster care, so we have to look at the foster care statutes, which, of course, is, as we all know, 16.1282-1A and also 16.1283-A1. We have to look at those and determine those to follow those facts. But even if you disagree and all the children are at issue, and the facts have already, the judge was the fact finder. I mean, the grandparents did not maintain a continuous relationship with his children. They visited with them, maybe seven times. The grandfather did. The grandmother hadn't had contact in, almost 3 years. They didn't send cards. They didn't contact them by phone when they were encouraged to for birthdays, Christmases, all those things. And when grandmother testified about the special needs of the children, she denied they had any special needs. She said she testified, I believe, that one of the children had acid reflux, and she didn't testify about their significant issues, which require intensive work with those two girls. So tell me. Tell me what I'm missing.
Okay. And Your Honor, I would submit that while the grandmother was in Miami, she was living there, working, trying to maintain her employment and the stable home. In the instance that the judge would, number one, either place them there through the ICPC or on their own, the separate independent custody petitions, Judge. And I would just submit to you that when we are talking about children and social services cases, very frequently we find ourselves, or the children find themselves, in homes of complete strangers. If they're removed from a home, they're placed in a foster care or emergency shelter. So very often they have to find themselves in a position where they have to adapt and get to know different people on occasion, Judge. And so I would submit to you that, number one, there's no reason that the Campbells should not have been given the opportunity to be integrated into the children's lives over a period of time, or given the opportunity to assume on a trial basis, custody of the children and let them pursue services in in Florida. And Judge, as I recall, there, if you go to the appendix, the foster care service plan, Part B, which was filed in November of 2013, indicates in that plan that the foster father of the girls, I think in particular, had lupus and would not be able to care for the children long term, and so he would be willing to work with any of the adoptive parents. So, Judge, I would just submit to you that even if, although the Campbells did not visit on a regular basis, the children at some point would have to get to know or be introduced to a new family anyway, because the foster parents of the young ladies, of the two girls, had indicated that they were not willing or able to keep them long term.
I wonder if you could, I could ask you to address, I think, kind of a preliminary question to deciding this case, and that is, who has the burden of proof in this case? This is a voluntary relinquishment of parental rights. The statute 16.1-283 says that the court shall give a consideration to granting custody to relatives of the child. And then it goes on to say that that transfer of custody to the relative shall not be entered unless there's a finding based upon preponderance of the evidence that the relative is interested, et cetera, et cetera. That seems to indicate to me that the burden is upon the relative to prove all of those, the existence of all of those factors. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Your Honor, I would agree with that, but in this particular instance, if you read the order, the judge took up the custody matter first. So at that point that he decided the custody matter, the parent's rights had not been terminated.
But if that's the case, if the relative has the burden of proof, then you're asking us basically to say, as a matter of law, the trial court erred here. That it's not a question of whether there were sufficient facts to support his decision. His decision was so erroneous that no person, no reasonable judge, could come to that conclusion.
Yes, sir. And just based on the evidence that's presented by the grandparents, Judge. And again, at the time that the judge took up the custody petition, I think he said so. If you read the transcript, he is very clear that he's taken up the custody petitions of the grandparents before he takes up the termination matters. So at that point, the parental rights had not been terminated.
Well, if the parental rights hadn't been terminated, then there's no right of the relative to have any custody of the child.
Judge, that's why they petitioned for custody. At that time, the children were still in the legal custody of the Department of Social Services.
Was that petition for custody pending determination of parental rights?
Your Honor, and I've gone back through this record several times. It went on for 4 years. That I think the children were removed April of 2012. Immediately after finding out that the children had been removed, my clients flew to Virginia, and I think that the initial foster care service plan indicated that the goal was return home concurrent with placement with relatives. And if you read the throughout the foster care service plan, throughout the foster care service plan, it becomes evident that the parents are not able to regain custody. And I think in November of 2013, my clients then filed their separate custody petitions for all of the children. So at all times, I would say from 2013 until the final decision in the circuit court, we had parallel, proceedings going on. And typically what happens in the juvenile court is whenever there are social services cases going on and the relatives are filed independent custody petitions, those custody petitions are carried along with the social services petitions to see if, in fact, the parents are going to be able to be relocated or be reunified with the children. And so I believe that's why the grandparents' custody petitions were carried along for so long.
Counsel, you have about 2 minutes remaining. I'll give you a little bit more time. Do you want to save that for rebuttal, or would you like to continue?
I think I've said enough. I'll save it for rebuttal.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you. I'll give you a little extra because we ask you a lot of questions.
Good
Good morning. May it please the court. I am George Somerville, counsel for the Department of Social Services. Mr. Howard is the guardian ad litem, and as we mentioned earlier, he gets 5 minutes of my time. Respectfully, Your Honors, this may be a hard case from the perspective of the grandparents, but it is not a difficult case from the perspective of the children. And that's the proper perspective. The law in Virginia for many years has been that the child's welfare is primary, paramount, and controlling. All other matters are subordinate. And we cited the MED case in this court from 1986 and the Mullen case from the Supreme Court back in 1948. And the Mullen court cited a bunch of earlier cases for that proposition. These are vulnerable children. They are now in a stable environment in the homes of loving foster parents who are ready and waiting to adopt them. Foster parents who have made it clear that the grandparents, Mr. and Mrs. Campbell, are welcome to visit them. I'm going to focus on the girls, as you noted, Judge Chafin. The boys are out because of the interstate compact on the placement of children.
So before you do, did you want to address Judge Petty's point about jurisdiction and procedural defaults?
The preservation? Your Honor, I can't stand here and tell you that I don't think the issue was preserved. I think they made the argument in the trial court that they should be granted custody. And once you have made, under the statute, once you have made that argument, you don't have to reiterate it by an endorsement to an order or anything else. So I would like to say it was not preserved, but I can't agree with that.
Okay, thank you.
I do not doubt that the grandparents love these children, but that does not mean that they would be qualified custodians. Each of these children, these girls, has an array of special needs. The grandparents' testimony, as you pointed out, Judge Chafin, their testimony demonstrates they really have no understanding of those needs at all. In fact, the evidence is they really don't understand the basic needs, or at best, they don't have the ability to take care of them. The children are in a stable environment. There was expert evidence that keeping the children in that environment will be critical to their long-term success in life. On the one hand, they have secure attachments with their foster parents. On the other hand, the grandparents are psychological strangers to them. There was abundant expert evidence that separating them from their foster parents, what the trial judge correctly said, the only parents they really... I'm sorry.
These facts were all well presented to the trial court. I'm interested in the legal issue, and I'm particularly interested in who has the burden of proof in this case, in the trial court. Could you address that for me, please?
Yes, I think, although the statute is not explicit on it, I think the clear implication is that the party moving for relief, namely asking for custody, has the burden of proof. Expert witness Don Wilhelm, a licensed clinical social worker with 30 years' experience in the field, testified that removing the girls from their foster parents would be a tremendous psychological loss. It would be devastating to them. Their reaction would be a psychological panic. The result would be damaging both in the short term and in the long term. It would affect their ability to form meaningful relationships on any level. It would affect them academically, physiologically, and across all domains. That's Mr. Wilhelm's testimony. He did testify that if he were forced to it, he would cooperate in an effort to transition the children to the grandparents. He testified that that would be a lengthy process, approximately 9 to 12 months, with frequent contacts beginning in the foster parents' home and only very gradually moving to separate visits in a park or a Chuck E. Cheese and then to overnights with the grandparents. The grandparents are not able, because of employment, to spend the time, or Mrs. Campbell isn't, I should limit it to her, to spend the time in Lynchburg that is necessary to do that. The girls were born December 5th, 2011. They've lived with their foster parents since May 2012, when they were 5 months old. They're now a little over 5 years old. As of the last hearing in the circuit court 11 months ago, the last time Mr. Campbell had visited the girls was more than a year earlier than that. Mrs. Campbell had not visited with the girls since January 2013, over 3 years at that point, over 4 years now. But in her view, she and Mr. Campbell are interchangeable. They are one. She is there if he is there.
Well, ultimately, Mr. Campbell, and I think counsel indicated that he suffers from, I think she said lupus, but he has issues and had issues being able to interact and maintain the children.
Yes.
The DSS or the counselors had to step in, and in fact, I think they had to retrieve him from the women's bathroom at one point in time.
Yes.
I don't think that's really an issue right now. That certainly Mr. Campbell, and I mean, certainly counsel did not acquiesce, but he has a number of issues. So it would have to be the grandmother, that being Mrs. Campbell, that would, you know, have to be the one that would, if the children were relocated, would have to be the primary caretaker. I mean, that's clear.
I agree with that, Your Honor. And I will skip to the ultimate question in this case, is whether the trial court abused its discretion by finding it was not in the children's best interest to grant the Campbells custody petitions, and whether the court's conclusion that, and I will quote, it was unable to make the findings necessary to transfer the custody of any of the children to a relative as required by sections 16.1-282.1A1 and 16.1-283A1, whether that conclusion, that he could not make those findings, is supported by the evidence or plainly wrong. As a matter of law, as this court knows, the trial court could not grant custody of the children to the Campbells without making the findings required by those statutes. I say this with no disrespect to the Campbells, without in any way questioning their bona fides. The trial court's conclusion is abundantly supported by the evidence. It was not plainly wrong, and it was surely not an abuse of discretion. Thank you.
Thank you. Police and court, my name is Killis Howard, and I'm the guardian ad litem in this case. I simply want to say that these kids have been out of their family home for 5 years almost, and have been in social services care, and they've got good parents, foster parents have been taking care of them. And the proposition that these two grandparents, now 67 and 75, I believe it is, could make an effective showing at any point during the trial or any other time is just beyond anybody's willingness, I think, submit anybody's willingness to believe it. So I'd ask you, the court, to just affirm the lower court's order. Thank you.
Are there any questions, Guardian Lana? Thank you, sir. Ms. Whitfield.
Just very briefly.
I'm going to give you 3 minutes if you need it.
Yes.
In regards to the boys, I don't think I addressed my argument in regards to the boys sufficiently. Because at that time, the parents' rights had not been terminated. Again, the judge took up the grandparents' custody matter first. It is my argument that the transfer of custody could have occurred off of the parents' separate custody petition without the finding that the ICPC was a favorable instrument. But more importantly, judges, the ICPC only disqualified the Campbells because they were not yet therapeutic foster parents. They had gone through all the training to become foster parents, and they were getting the training to become therapeutic foster parents. So even though the ICPC was not favorable, certainly the judge could have awarded custody off of the Campbells' single custody petition on a best interest standard. Again, it is something that is done frequently, number one, because ICPCs sometimes can be a very lengthy process, and the judge wants some permanency in the minors' lives. Finally, and I know that counsel is not intimating this, but the statute does not say that parents who too mature should not be given, a favorable glance when you're talking about caring for children. And in this instance, this matter went on for 4 years. I don't think there's any dispute for at least the first year and a half. The Department of Social Services focused mainly on the parents and trying to rehabilitate the parents and get them in a position where the children could go back to the parents' home. But also, in the intervening 4 years, the grandparents did everything that they could to make sure or ensure that they had a suitable housing, finances, that they were in a position to care for their children, their health, their physical health, as well as their mental and cognitive issues. And that can be demonstrated by the fact that they did become foster care parents. They were receiving training to become therapeutic foster parents. And had, I guess, the Department of Social Services tried to work with them in any meaningful manner to reunite the children with them, then I'm certain that that's something they would have been amenable to. Thank you.
Thank you. We will come down and greet counsel.